This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Normally, discussions about evolving gender roles focus on women, but the Lichter Lecture Series in Judaic Studies at UC this fall focuses on the theme of envisioning the Jewish man, past, present, and future. The first presenter, tomorrow night at 7 p.m. in the Taft Center on the UC campus, is Associate Professor for the Bourne's Jewish Studies Program at Indiana University, Sarah Imhoff. The title of her talk is, Are Jewish Men Manly? A Story of American Masculinity. Joining her is the Assistant Professor of Judaic Studies and Co-Director of the Lichter Lecture Series, Professor Craig Perry, and Professor of Sociology at UC, and author of Buttoned Up, Clothing, Conformity, and White-Collar Masculinity, Dr. Aaron Casanova. Well, I want to welcome everybody to Cincinnati Edition. It's great to have you here. And Craig, you're the Assistant Professor of Judaic Studies and co-producer of the Lichter Lecture Series at the University of Cincinnati. And this first segment, the first presentation this year is coming up on October the 4th. The title is Envisioning Jewish Man. May seem like a little bit of a strange topic for the Lichter Lecture Series. Why'd you choose this topic?
Right. Well, we did want it to be a little disorienting because we're trying to take a topic that we think is taken for granted, and that is, you know, notions of masculinity and what makes a man a man. And we want to get people thinking about how, in fact, masculinity is something that has changed over time, that's constructed and thought about in different ways across time and culture. And so we also wanted to think about the historical dimension, you know, past and present, but also to underscore that, you know, we can envision an alternate future about, you know, what the role of masculinity is and how people can think about it.
So things are mutable, that people can have an impact on the future.
Exactly.
Okay. Sarah Imhoff, you're the principal speaker and on October the 4th. And, you know, I would suggest that many people would assume that when you're talking about religion, men and women, they may be able to imagine that the roles of women in the late 20th and 21st centuries have changed and are changing. But I think they probably assume that religion and masculinity are fixed somehow, either in scriptures or just that men are fixed in a different way that women are. So, you know, if you put those three things together, there's different dynamics here.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And one thing I like to keep in mind is that even though scriptures might be fixed, scriptures don't actually speak for themselves. So we always have religious communities interpreting those scriptures. And so even the same sentence in the same language means different things to different people at different times. And so that means that there really is space for changing gender dynamics and even changing scriptural interpretation.
Well, you know, in the case of masculinity, is there a sense that that is, I don't think anybody would doubt that women's roles are changing rapidly, but is there a sense of dynamism in masculine roles?
I think that you're right that there's a much stronger sense of dynamism in as far as femininity goes. We often talk about how this or that culture treats women or the changing role of women in history, but we don't often talk about how cultures treat men or how men's roles might change. But of course, men have gender too, and masculinity, like femininity, looks different for different cultures and in different times. And so even when people don't palpably sense a dynamism, it really is there. If we think about men's roles in synagogues today, it looks different than it did in the early 20th century. And that's partially about women's presence, but it's also partially because the role of the rabbi has changed some. And when men are rabbis, they're doing slightly different things than they were doing 100 years ago, and really different things than they were doing many centuries ago. So yes, we often see the dynamism in femininity, but it's also there in masculinity.
Okay. Well, Aaron Casanova, you're coming at this as a sociologist, not necessarily as a Jewish scholar or a Judaic scholar. And you're also raising the question of how fashion is sort of a portal to understanding changing masculine identities and masculine roles. Do you see that masculinity in general and across the society is in change and is dynamic?
Yes and no. So talking about my sociological perspective, we look at gender not as something that people have, but as something that we do. And as something that is seen in our relationships with other people. So as far as who has the economic and social and political power in our society, that's still concentrated among men. But we do see a little bit of broadening as far as different styles of masculinity, different ways that men are doing gender or representing that. So that's where I see more change. As far as the dollars and cents and, you know, the political representation, that's changing much slower.
Okay. Craig, one of the aspects of this is the roles that women can play in Jewish life are expanding and changing. I'm not Jewish by background, but there are now Jewish women rabbis, cantors, certainly involved in the education roles. How's that changing where men fit into the synagogue or Jewish life in general?
Can I also want to interject one thing relevant to the last question? So even if there's a lack of dynamism or if a gender role or expectation seems static, I think defending that or keeping it the status quo takes work, right? So it's not neutral if gender expectations or roles are staying the same. So I think we see that in reactions to, for example, in our current moment, accusations of sexual misconduct or assault, and the notion of boys will be boys. Like, in a way, this is a defense, whether if it's witting or unwitting, of what men do or what is expected from men. So there is, even if a gender role maybe is not changing, I think there is sort of activity and work being done to keep it the same or to defend it. So the question you just asked about, so I think that the inclusion of more women into Jewish institutional life and to the academy, first of all, is only to the strength of those institutions, but it also, I think, forces men to confront perhaps their own biases that they're not always aware of about what women can do, how they fit into professional relationships and social relationships. But also, I think, makes us see that different styles of leadership or of ways of relating to others of bring something new to the table as far as how we run our organizations, how we make collaborations and build teams. So,
yeah, there isn't just a single way.
Right.
Yeah. Or we could probably explore that whole leadership question and say there's not a single way for men to lead either.
True.
But women, by bringing women into more leadership roles, you throw all those questions on the table in a different way. Sarah Imhoff, you approach your work, even though you're interested in Jewish masculinity, you don't begin by assuming, if I understand correctly, that being Jewish is the key determinative to identity. But you talk about this experience that men, in this case Jewish men, have had in America for 350 years. And they're not necessarily just Jewish men that you're – there's much more fluidity here involved. Is that correct?
That is correct. So it's very common in Jewish studies to begin by looking at Jewish people and then asking something like, how do they live their Jewish identity, or what does their Jewish identity mean to them? And there's definitely a space for that kind of study. But what I was interested in was Jewish men in the context of American life. And so it felt like I would be assuming the answer if I just looked at Jewish men and then said, oh, how did they do masculinity? And then I called that Jewish masculinity. right? Because maybe they were doing the same kind of masculinity as all of the other people around them, then it wouldn't be distinctively Jewish masculinity. So I really wanted to begin from a historical space where I looked at how other people, non-Jews, imagined Jewish masculinity, how Jews themselves described Jewish masculinity, and to see if that was in fact different or what kind of relationship that had. And I could see as it developed that in many ways that looked like other white American masculinities, but in some ways it was different. And that was, those differences were often largely shared by Jews and non-Jews, how they imagined that Jewish masculinity differently. And there were other ethnic and racial groups that say African-American masculinity looked rather different from white American masculinities. The book concentrates largely on the early 20th century, but we could see similar things both before and after that time period.
Can you give me some concrete examples of different expressions of masculinity early 20th century so that it's not just theoretical, but here's how you actually see it playing out?
Yeah. So one of the fascinating things I found was there was a shared sense, Jews, non-Jews, even anti-Semites, that Jewish men were nonviolent. So even if Jewish men committed crimes, they didn't have these masculine vices. So they were nonviolent. They tended not to be drunkards. So even if they were committing crimes, they would be like crimes of embezzlement or arson, but the idea wasn't that they ever got into bar fights, for example. Now, anti-Semites said, oh, this is because Jews are not courageous. They're kind of wimpy. And Jews said, this is because Jews are virtuous, right? So people have different explanations of why this might be, but there was a real shared sense that Jewish men weren't inclined toward physical violence in any way.
I may be mistaken, but weren't there some Jews involved in mob activity?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and that's part of what's so interesting about it. That's counterfactual. It's not actually true that no Jewish men were involved in interpersonal violence. Some Jewish men were, but there was this shared sense that that wasn't a Jewish characteristic. That wasn't what Jewish masculinity should look like, and it wasn't even what Jewish masculinity did look like, people imagined. So you get a sense of the strength of the cultural impressions of how Jewish men are that are so strong that it means that then everybody dismisses these Jewish mobsters as like individual instances of something very strange or just a kind of one-off example, not an example of what Jewish men actually are or are like.
Aaron Casanova, your title of your book, or at least one of your books, Buttoned Up, Clothing Conformity, White Collar Masculinity. Mm-hmm. And in that particular book, as a sociologist, you're not a historian, you're looking at things today. Mm-hmm. And how does masculinity express, again, I'd like concretely, mm-hmm. different masculinities expressed concretely through dress, through fashion. And again, most of us would probably think, oh, topic of fashion, we're talking about women. But no, you're talking about men.
Yeah, and there's actually a chapter in the book called The F Word because men in my study did not like the word fashion and did not want to identify with that at all. So I'm looking specifically at men in corporate America and how they're feeling like they need to kind of present themselves and present their bodies at work. And they are, the men I spoke with, a lot of them were really anxious because they feel like things are shifting. In the past, maybe people were not looking at their bodies or judging how they were dressed, and now that scrutiny has been heightened. That's happening also at a moment in which people's employment feels shakier than it has in the past, right? You're not going to start a job and stay at that job for decades and decades and decades, right? Wanting to pay the right amount of attention to how they dress and how they look, but are also aware of stereotypes about men who pay too much attention, that that's looked at negatively. So they're kind of trying to balance out what they feel are new pressures with these kind of older ideas about, you know, real men shouldn't worry about certain things.
For white collar men in the business world, mm-hmm. who do they dress for?
There's a lot of discussion of that in the book, and it's mostly for their boss and for the other people that are around them. If they're a client-facing, if they're in a client-facing position, they're also dressing for their clients or the people that they have to sell to.
So they're trying to communicate something to that client.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if they're dressing for their boss,
mm-hmm.
what difference does it make if your boss is a man or a woman? And I've had bosses who have been both men and women, most recently, in fact, a Jewish woman. So,
Well, what we know about the corporate world is that the higher you go up the pyramid, the fewer women there are. So actually, relatively few men in my study had women bosses. And they didn't really describe, those that did didn't describe them really in a different way than male bosses. So they had similar expectations. And they treated kind of their boss's expectations more as a personality quirk. They didn't see it as an organizational imperative necessarily, but more, you know, this is just something that this person is fixated on.
The fact that my female boss gave me unmatched socks, you know, the socks that come in threes.
Mm-hmm.
I always took it she was trying to get me to be a little looser, anyway. Craig, how has American Judaism accommodated new masculinity? How does Judaism make sure that it's attracting men into active lives as religious people?
I can answer that, not from an academic or professional perspective. That's definitely a better question for Sarah. But I guess, I'm Jewish and I go to a synagogue, and I think that I guess I'm a consumer of Judaism, you might say, or a participant. And, you know, from that perspective,
I think that'd be better.
Okay. Yeah. We'll go with participant. I think that there are, you know, organizations that have been around for a while, I'm not sure how long, like Brotherhood, for example, that try to provide men with ways that they can associate with each other and shape their own experience in the synagogue and feel like they're contributing to the larger synagogue life, like within a framework, you know, that is focused on men socializing with other men. But I also think it's important to recognize the denominational diversity within Judaism. And so I think that's going to look very different depending on where one is. For example, in worship services, depending on the denomination one belongs to.
When you say denomination, you mean Reform, Orthodox, Conservative?
Exactly. Thank you.
Okay.
So you'll see men and women participating in the service in different ways. I don't want to caricature any of the denominations, but there's vitality and dynamism in all of them in different ways. So those would be the two main things I think that come to my mind. One is, you know, associations within the synagogue, that social affiliations. And then two, in the ritual and worship life of a congregation, you see men and women participating in particular ways and with varying degrees of difference between the two.
Sarah Imhoff, Craig just at the beginning of that answer said that you might have some interesting things to say about that, about how Judaism has a change to accommodate changing identities and masculine styles.
Yeah. So one answer here is that this is very much a live question within Jewish communities. Jewish men's federations often say, how do we get more men? And this isn't an answered question. It's still one that people are thinking about. One thing that you see in Jewish religious life in the U.S. is people come and go. There's a sort of ebb and flow with synagogue association, and that tends to be in accordance with life cycle events. So life cycle events like, do you have children? Suddenly, synagogue might be more appealing. You might want your kids to have a Jewish education, where when you were single and in your 20s, you might not be going to synagogue. Similarly, stuff like death of a parent will often draw people into synagogue. And so one of the challenges for Jewish communal life becomes, if you have people who show up at these times, how do you hang on to them and get them to continue to be affiliated? And some of the styles that work for women's affiliation seem to work for men's affiliation, although it also seems to be true that sisterhood groups in general seem to have more participants and be stronger than brotherhood groups. And so that is still a live question for many Jewish communities.
And I would suggest, coming from a different tradition, that could be used, that same answer could be used. You could take out Jewish and synagogue and put in church, and, you know, it's everybody sort of worrying about that whole question of involvement and participation.
I wanted to add something. So I'm a historian of the Jews of the medieval Islamic world, so a little bit further afield from where we are now. But I want to add that, so what I see and what I think one of our speakers who's coming for the second talk, Professor Michael Satlow, will talk about is that men also compete with each other in these synagogue and communal settings in ways that they use to define and project their own masculinity. So the way I see it, for example, is the laity, laymen, will defy the rabbis or the communal authorities on particular issues. And the way they talk about it, like, suggests that it's their masculinity is at stake. And one of the things that Professor Satlow is going to talk about when he comes at the end of October is how men and women in antiquity and in the late antique period specifically experienced shame in different ways. And one of the ways that a Jewish man might shame another man was not on the field of battle, but rather in the house of study. And outmaneuvering him intellectually could create great shame for his, you know, his adversary in that way. So, you know, we also see that the synagogue is a place where masculinity is, where we can see it happening, but also a place where men actually compete with each other and define their masculinity that way.
Well, there you go. So I would like to just end with a question here that maybe goes draws a little farther beyond just the Jewish community and the Jewish experience. Aaron Casanova, in your study, one of the things that strikes me, not so much in your study, but what strikes me right now is how men's fashion clothing styles have become more relaxed, even in a place like Procter & Gamble in this city, which, my goodness, the idea of wearing anything but a white shirt and a blue or a red tie was anathema when I was younger. So what's that tell us?
I think it tells us that clothing retailers want us to buy more clothes, but and that's actually something that the men that I spoke with were a little stressed about. You know, we've transitioned now to business casual. Now I have to go get a whole new wardrobe, and that's something that they were concerned about. And so I think that it's just, again, the kind of shifting expectations of how men should be acting and behaving and presenting themselves, that if you're not waking up in the morning and putting on a suit, then what are you doing and how do you do it right when it's still something that's kind of in flux?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank everybody for being with us today. Sarah Imhoff, who will be coming in for the first of the Lichter presentations on October the 4th in the evening at 7 p.m. Aaron Casanova from the University of Cincinnati, who will be commenting, and Craig Perry, who is organizing the series. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Dan.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. Segment producer is Layla Shukui. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.